Mediocrity Podcast. Talk about that nerdy stuff. Movies, comics, and video games. It's all good and there ain't no fluff. Brian Kluger is hosting the show. Jeremy Miggert's got jokes. Jonathan Atterbury sounds really handsome, and we all sure love you folks.
Welcome to Mediocrity Podcast, your freshest smelling, just okay podcast. Oh, I missed you guys. It's so good to be here. Mediocrity Podcast, where we talk about video games and horror and sci-fi movies, comic books, all sorts of fun stuff. We've been here. It's our 53rd episode, and I love it. We're gonna do at least triple that, I think. Just depending on if the podcast goes okay. But Mediocrity, find us on iTunes, Multimedia Men. Of course, I'm with Jeremy Miggert and Jonathan Atterbury, and we want to send our deepest thoughts and good vibes all the way to Houston, because this hurricane is killing everybody. Well, I don't know about killing everybody, but it's making some shit hard for people, right? I mean, comics won't be available in Houston area. That's crazy.
Dude, it's been mind blowing to see all the crazy stuff going down out there. I know a lot of people living out in that area, so we're definitely hoping for the best for everybody out there.
Yeah, so you're on the West Coast, and Jeremy and I are in Dallas, which is like 3 hours north of Houston. And for the past few days, we get like 3 minute rain showers, heavy rain showers, and that's it. We don't have to deal with what they're dealing with down in Houston, which is lucky for us but sad for everybody else. But, you know, we talk about movies and video games and comics and all this fun stuff all the time, but down there, like, life is shut down. Nobody's going to the movies. Nobody's reading comics. There's electricity's out. Sucks.
It's survival mode down there right now, man. It's pretty gnarly. Just looking at those pictures, it's hard to believe that's, you know, happening here in America. Anytime you see stuff like that happening, it always just seems a little bit foreign, I think, because, you know, we here in America are pretty fortunate where we don't often have these kinds of things happen to us. So every now and then when it does happen, it's a little bit hard to comprehend almost. It just feels like science fiction.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, and it almost doesn't seem real because you're just so used to seeing, you know, things like that in, you know, movies and video games and comics. So it's like when you see it in, you know, when you see it in real life, and you're looking at it on the internet, it's like, man, it's just tough to even really comprehend it.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of those pictures look like something out of a movie, you know? Whole streets covered with water. You see cars fully submerged and stuff like that. It is just absolutely terrifying.
We wish them the best. We hope that it stops raining now, but it looks like it's still going to rain there through Wednesday. But hope for the best. I think people are doing a good job of keeping, you know, everything cool and calm. So that's good. But we wish them the best, but we have to move on. We're with the show, so hopefully these people in Houston and everywhere around the world can have a little bit of fun for an hour listening to us have the answers to everything nerdery combined, which I'm excited for. We got to do some news. Jack Kirby, 100, he would turn 100 today, right?
That is correct.
So, Jack Kirby, is he the best artist in the world for comic books or no?
Depends on how you qualify the best. And Kirby is a guy that, in terms of just his sheer like drafting or drawing ability, he's the first person to say he is not the best draftsman ever. But what he was really good at is drawing things that looked incredibly exciting, had a ton of energy, but also great at creating stuff. I mean, that guy, just the mountain of things that guy created is almost really hard to comprehend, because there are things that like are so ingrained in our everyday culture. I mean, you know, I mean, just at Marvel alone, before he went to DC, you know, I mean, he, you know, created the Fantastic Four. He created the X-Men. He created the Avengers. He created Captain America. You know, it's like, and kind of like everything that's kind of encompassed inside of those worlds. It's like, it's almost nuts, man. It's really hard to comprehend everything that that guy put together.
Yeah, I would say you bring up a good point. Maybe he wasn't like the best, but I would say that most artists nowadays, even writers, will cite him as their inspiration. So he might be the godfather of all this, right?
Oh, very much so. That's a great way to put it.
He was the pioneer of all this cool stuff. He was born in 1917 and he died in 1994 at 76 years old. You said Avengers, Captain America. If you know Stan Lee, the person who goes next to him stands equally beside him, wouldn't you say, is Jack Kirby, right?
Yeah, I agree. You know, and I feel like in terms of, you know, you could put him next to Stan Lee. And even in terms of that, I mean, you could actually probably put him. Stan Lee will always be the most notoriable because of the time that he spent. Like, he was big into like promoting comics when nobody really was. You know, he was like going out doing a lot of public speaking and promotion. And so Stan Lee gets attention because he did those things, which is rightfully so. But when you look at volume of stuff that Kirby created overall, he probably created more than Stan Lee did, because not only did Kirby create that, but then he went to DC and created a ton of other stuff, which is like your Dark Side character and so like Orion and so much DC stuff that even that influenced Marvel, because if Stan Lee hadn't created Dark Side, you wouldn't have Thanos, because Thanos, the guy that created Thanos, loved Kirby and he basically wanted to make his own Dark Side, and that's what Thanos was.
No, all right. And Thanos is like in the big villain now in all the Marvel movies. Well, yeah, that's what they're leading to right now.
Mm-hmm.
So you being a professional artist, you know, you create comic books, Jeremy, and you do all this fun stuff. What does Jack Kirby mean to you?
Man, he is a dude that just inspires me to work hard and to constantly try to make new stuff. You know, you see a lot of artists that spend all day long, you know, on Instagram or whatever, and they're just cranking out fan art of stuff that everybody else has created. But it's like, you know, to me, Jack doesn't make me want to sit around and draw other people's stuff. Jack Kirby makes me want to sit down and try to make new things.
That's cool. That's very cool. Do you think if he were alive today, what do you think he would be doing? Like, you know, given that his age, but like, do you still think he would be creating comic books?
I think so.
Think so?
Yeah.
What do you think he would love all these movies coming out based off his characters?
He was a little disenfranchised with Marvel and DC kind of towards the end of his career, so it's hard to say. I would imagine if he were alive, they would probably have already, like, they would have been kind of kicking him down the money a little more, so he might have been a little more open to it. But kind of towards the end, he was super disenfranchised with both Marvel and DC.
All right. What about you, Atterbury? You have anything to say on Jack Kirby? I know you've gotten Jeremy some gifts of Jack Kirby before, so you know who he is.
I do know who he is. Brian's favorite joke is anytime we discuss what we're going to be talking about in the show, is he'll usually just say that I have no idea what it is we're talking about.
It's a joke that never gets old.
it is correct about 10% of the time. Usually it's the topics Brian wants to talk about. Because it'll be some obscure, horrible 80s movie. They'll be like, yeah, let's recast this movie that nobody's ever seen and gives a shit about.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, whatever. Jack Kirby, you know, as we've discussed in the show a number of times, I'm not the biggest comic book dude, but I definitely respect everything that he did and the trailblazing, and I appreciate the characters he made. So I'm glad he was a dude that existed.
So you don't like him, but you respect him.
I do like him. I didn't say I don't like him.
Just admit it.
I like and respect the work that he's created.
Okay. All right. All right. All right. So Jack Kirby would have been 100 today. That's crazy. 100 years old. 1917. None of us were born. Well. Jeremy might have been born just a year prior to 1917. But he looks good, doesn't he?
He looks good for his age.
Well, my birthday is a day after his.
Oh, yeah? Really?
Mm-hmm.
It was meant to be. I mean,
old Maggard's birthday is tomorrow.
Oh, my goodness. You're going to be 28?
Mm-hmm.
Sweet.
Times three.
Man, that makes you like 80-something. I like it. Well, very, very cool. Jack Kirby, Jeremy Maggart, that's good stuff. That's we have to mention him because he's a big part of our lives. All right, let's move on. Let's move on to stuff that we all watched on Netflix, which came out this week, which is getting really horrible and really good reviews split. You know, not necessarily down the middle. I think there's more people who don't like this new movie that came out on Netflix called Death Note, which is based on previous story and anime and all this other stuff. But it was directed by Adam Wingard, who gave us The Guest and some VHS segments and the recent Blair Witch movie. I like Adam Wingard. I've interviewed him before. I think he's a fan of horror. I think he does well. I really like Death Note. This movie was cool, fun. It was silly in a few parts. I think it achieved its goal for me, at least, in entertainment wise. I need to know what you guys think about this movie, Death Note.
I loved it. I was totally excited to see this one coming out, and I've been a fan of the Adam Wingard stuff that I've seen so far. So I was stoked about it and watched it, I think, Friday night and completely enjoyed every minute of it. I especially liked, I don't even know the actor's name, but the guy that played the detective.
So L, the detective, he's been in tons of stuff. He got his start in the movie Short Term 12. And if you've never seen Short Term 12, see that movie. He is amazing in it. But he was in Get Out this year, that movie Get Out, as well as one of the Purge sequels. But he's awesome. Keith Stanfield's his name.
I loved that character that he played. You know, not only his acting job in portraying the character, but the character that they created for that role was just a really, really cool character.
Yeah, so if you're unfamiliar with Death Note, it's about this kid who kind of like inherits this book called the Death Note. And with it comes this demon. And if this kid writes somebody's name in this book and how they should die, it will happen
immediately.
So this kid and his new girlfriend pretty much set out to take out all the bad people in the world, kind of like a Boondock Saints type of thing. Things go haywire, things happen. And meanwhile, as you say, there is a detective, kind of like very mysterious detective after.
Almost like a detective that's a member of Anonymous or something along those lines. It's kind of what it feels like because he's like a brilliant hacker type thing like that. But he's like Sherlock Holmes type, you know, of the modern era, basically. He's a super detective.
Right. So Atterbury and I really loved it. But Jeremy seemed, I don't know what Jeremy thought a whole lot about it, but it doesn't seem like he loved it as much as we did. Jeremy, your thoughts?
I loved it in the beginning. I thought it was a really awesome concept. The second I realized that Willem Dafoe was voicing the Death God, I was sold with that. And I really enjoyed it, but like kind of towards the end, the wheels fell off a little bit because I was a little confused because Light, you know, he's basically the current owner of the book. But to me, it was weird that Light's the owner of the book, but anybody can write a name in the book. And if that's the case, why do you need to have one guy that's like responsible for owning the book when anybody can write something can write a name in the book? You know what I'm saying? And so there were a couple moments like that where I was just kind of like, well, if Light's in charge of the book and he's the owner, why can't his girlfriend write names in the book?
I'm pretty sure they addressed that in one of the rules, which is that anything that is written on a page that's already been done, that will have to come true also. So I know that they've got the owner, and he's the only one that can, like, start new pages and stuff like that, but I'm pretty sure that in one of the rules they were saying, like, that was kind of their work.
Did they address it in the movie?
I'm pretty sure that's all I've seen. I'm pretty sure that they kind of glazed over a little too fast, in my opinion, because it was very quick. But, you know, in all those different rules, I think that there, I'm pretty sure there was one that kind of said anyone who writes something on a page that's already been done, that's going to happen too.
Yeah, that's okay. What I thought. Okay. Because I remember there was like two or three segments that lasted, you know, a few seconds long where they were going over rules. But again, like you said, it went too fast and you're like, okay, what rules are there, you know?
Yeah, it was a little, but then again, I also think that that was kind of cool because the whole, I think what they were trying to portray is that Light, who is the main character and the owner of the Death Note, also kind of too quickly went over the rules.
Glanced at it and was like, this is awesome.
He just didn't pay attention. It's like everyone reading a user agreement on their iPhone. Just like, yeah, I agree.
And I have to give,
so that's kind of what they did.
I have to give props to Shea Whigham, the guy who played Light's father in the movie. I love that actor so much. He was on Boardwalk Empire and tons of other stuff, but he was a really good role in that movie too.
Yeah, that was great. A solid role for him.
And
I also loved the gore in that movie. We got some really good gore in that
gore
movie.
Gore was good.
Oh, there was some great gore. There are scenes in there where there are decapitations and all sorts of good gory stuff. And I got to say that the death, the demon, looked badass. Like,
oh, absolutely. That was a scary looking monster.
Yeah. And like, just, you know, you get that, those remnants of, you know, Green Goblin Willem Dafoe in there. And it was just really cool to see, you know, see him like that again. And just like, you know, the mix of CG and practical effects on that costume was really cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I dug it. I want to watch the, I want to watch the anime and see, and check it out.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if it's on, if it's available or not, but
it's on Netflix.
Okay. All right. So yeah,
they put the anime on Netflix, I think not too long before the movie was coming out.
That'll be good. Death Note, go see it. It's a fun horror movie. It's gory, but it has a lot of heart to it. And did you like, you know, how they portrayed Light and his girlfriend in the movie? Or do you think that was just kind of, you know, they trying to find something quick and they just copped out? Or what do you think? Without spoiling anything.
I actually liked Light. I thought he was good. I thought he had a good combination of being serious enough, but also being funny. I mean, there's a great scene where he sees the demon for the first time and just loses his mind. And I thought that that scene was actually really funny and realistic. I was watching it going, yeah, that's pretty much what I would do if I saw a demon pop up in the room. Yep. Just scream like a little girl and try to run away.
I liked, one of my favorite parts was, I think it was when the demon was in his bedroom and the demon like holds up his hand and he was like, whoa, wow, your fingers are huge.
That was cool. Yeah, I liked it. And if you haven't checked out Adam Weingart's other movies, seriously, check out The Guest. It is like Terminator 2 and Halloween in one movie. It is great. Also, there's a couple of anthology films called VHS. He does a couple of those. And the recent Blair Witch movie, which he did, which is also really good. And he did Your Next as well, which was a really fun slasher film, if you have not seen it, that came out a few years ago. Highly recommended. Death Note, do it. I'll have to quickly mention another TV show that debuted on Netflix at the same time as Death Note is called Disjointed. It's a TV show. It's with Kathy Bates, and centers around Kathy Bates owning a medicinal marijuana store. I couldn't even get through the first episode. It was that terrible and awful. It has a laugh track. Oh, it's like the worst sitcoms ever. You know, that setup and punchline, you know, look at the audience. Oh, it's so bad. So bad. Don't do it. Just watch Death Note.
So we got to acknowledge that this is the same creator. So Chuck Lorre writes Disjointed. And it's the same. He's the same writer and creator that made Two and a Half Men and Big Bang Theory. So if you are a fan of those shows, you'll like Disjointed. It feels very similar to those. And I watched the first episode. I like Kathy Bates' portrayal of her character in that show. I found her to be really funny. But the rest was not so good.
It's unwatchable. Oh, God, it's unwatchable.
Worse than the Ashton Kutcher Netflix show?
I haven't seen any of the Ashton Kutcher.
Is that The Ranch?
The Ranch.
Oh, on The Ranch. I think it's more watchable than The Ranch.
The ranch was terrible.
Yeah, like, I did not like the ranch.
I watched the first episode and I was like, okay, this is awful. And the second episode, I'm like, okay, no, this is still terrible. And I was like, I just felt like I was like waiting for that show to get good. And after like four or five episodes, I was like, okay, fuck this, I'm out.
That's exactly what happened to me. Did not like the ranch. And so far, I'm going to say I don't like Disjointed, but you know, I'll give it another couple episodes. However, there's one other one that they just released that I am excited to check out, which is Norsemen, which is a comedy. It's a half-hour sitcom comedy that's basically in the world of Vikings.
Okay.
So just like the Vikings TV show, but a comedy. It looks ridiculous, but it looks great at the same time. So I'm looking forward to checking that one out. It's out now on Netflix.
Sweet, sweet. Did you all watch BoJack Horseman at all? Speaking of Norse Horseman, no? Never seen that show?
Mm-mm.
All right. I like BoJack Horseman. It's coming up on its third season. It's an animated show. I like it. It's coming fun. Yeah, check it out if you like, you know, funny animated shows, I guess. BoJack Horseman.
Last week, we were also talking about Defenders.
Oh, yes.
And did you finish? I finished the first season of Defenders.
So?
And last week I said it was fucking terrible. And this week I will say it was meh. I after having completed it, it's not fucking terrible.
I told you it got better as it went.
It did. It went from being a 2 or a 3 to on a scale of 1 to 10 to being a 5.5, maybe a 6 at best.
That's pretty good, man.
I like that he was about to go decimal point. He's like 5.5.
Five and a half.
Yeah, I'll just go 6. Five.
Yeah, just round up, whatever. I mean, really though, I think I don't know. It's hard to say. I just didn't love it. There's so much about that show that I wanted to like. I did not like it ultimately, though. And, you know, everything that happened in that show, that's what I was bitching about this last week. And the main problem I have is that nothing that happens with any of the plot points elicits any kind of emotional reaction from me. I just watched the whole show and I'm just like, eh. You know, people die or almost die or, you know, there's perilous shit going on. And none of it I feel like I care about whatsoever. And that to me is a huge fail in a show.
I don't know. It sounds like you liked it, man.
Yeah.
So what got it from a 3 to a 6?
I think the second half was more Daredevil stuff, and that's the only one of the shows out of all of those Netflix superhero shows that I've really enjoyed so far. I like the Daredevil world. I like the guy that plays the Daredevil. I like all the actors in that whole world, and they were a little bit more present in the second half of the show. And you got to see more of him fighting and less of Iron Fist, which is really the thing that's the breaking point for me. I cannot stand the Iron Fist stuff.
Poor Iron Fist.
Yeah, I was surprised they started out so Iron Fist heavy with it.
Yeah, I was surprised by that too, and that's exactly what I didn't like about it. But also, the Jessica Jones shit is almost like unbearable to me. I don't dislike Kristen Ritter. I liked her in Breaking Bad, and she's been good in a number of other things she's done. But just the fucking script for this show is just gives her the dumbest lines completely that I can even imagine. It's so bad, and her. I don't know. I feel like she's just doing a really crappy impression of Black Widow.
No. Well, then.
Kluger, did you finish it?
I have not finished it yet, unfortunately. I've been watching... What have I watched? I watched a documentary to review called Motherland. It was no Defenders. Although I would rather watch Defenders. But I'll get to it, and I might be in the middle of really good on Jeremy's side and really liking it on John's side. I really thought he was going to do it. Last week I said fucking terrible, and this week, fuck yes, it was awesome. And I think
I knew it wasn't going to swing that far. I was just waiting to see where it was going to land.
That's good. All right. So the other big show we have to talk about, which I assume we all watched, was the season finale of Game of Thrones. And I would like to say that my prediction came true last night. I thought of you guys.
Which prediction was that?
Jon Snow and Daenerys hooking up.
Yeah, that was.
There was a
fight. Didn't everyone predict that though?
Y'all said no. Y'all said y'all said no.
Yeah, I didn't think they were going to do it, but they did, and man, was that a moral conundrum of a scene. Like, you're like, yeah, I wanted this to happen, and in some ways this is great, but ew, no.
So, oh my God, last night's episode was so good. Even people that I've talked to who have not liked this season so far really liked this episode. We finally got to see Theon Greyjoy redeem himself and become a badass. Weren't you excited about that scene on the beach?
I don't know if I would give him redemption for that scene.
Yeah, I don't know if it was redemption.
He basically just pretty much got his ass kicked and then only won because Ramsay cut his junk off.
His lack of balls saved his life.
Yes.
You know what? At the very beginning of the episode, I think they were talking about cockless men.
They were. And I think it was Jamie and Sir Bronn of the Blackwater, and they both said that ultimately it all comes down to cocks.
Yes, it does. And we got that in the episode. It did come down to that.
It all came down to cock.
And Greyjoy beat this dude's ass, and it was so good to see. Oh, so good. All right, so also in this episode, Jesus Christ, two things. First, that we have to talk about is the amazing dialogue when Sansa and Arya turned on Littlefinger. It was baller, oh man. I literally got up out of my seat and my jaw was off. I'm like, what? That was badass.
So good. And the acting. Oh, my God. Ian, what's the guy's name?
Littlefinger?
That plays Littlefinger?
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. He's Mayor Carchetti in The Wire. I'm trying to remember his name.
Either way. So Littlefinger, the actor that portrays him, did such a good acting job in that scene. Just when she says, you know, when she finally says his name and you see it like occur to him, like, did I just hear what I thought I just heard? And then he goes through the whole range of emotions and just denial and
trying
to find the weak spot for how can I get out of this? And then eventually just breaking down, getting on his knees and crying and begging. Oh my God. It was so well done.
From the past couple episodes, you see Littlefinger turning Arya and Sansa, the sisters, the Stark sisters, against each other, and they bring Arya to the chambers to, like, basically sentence her to death. Like, Sansa's going to sentence her to death. And they bring her in, and they're looking at each other, and they're like, oh, God, what did you do? And they're like, so how do you plea to murder and treason? And then she looks over to Lord Baelish Littlefinger, and I'm like, oh my God, that was so badass. And then that look, you described it, oh my God, that look, he's like,
just the mini bomb going off in his brain. Excuse me?
Yeah, Jeremy, what did you think about that part?
I liked it when I knew it was going to go that way. I was kind of expecting that they were sort of playing him, because there was a conversation that happened between Arya and Sansa earlier in the season where they were kind of talking about, like, his scheming and his planning. So I was really wondering if everything we were seeing through the season was them playing him a little bit. But then when he made his little speech about, you know, imagining someone's reasons and then just expecting the worst, I was like, the second he said that, I was like, oh, man, that's going to be repeated back to him in about 5 minutes. So the second he said that, I was like, oh, they're totally playing him because then it just kind of played out the way that I thought it was going to, where he was going to basically be in there and then Arya was going to kill him.
I did not see that coming at all. I'll be the first to admit. When she said Lord Baelish and turned out that she was talking to him, I was like, what? I couldn't believe that they did that.
Yeah,
it was so good.
Like, I wanted that to happen, but I was like, God damn it, we're going to get them bickering for more episodes. But then they did it, and I'm like, oh my God, Littlefinger's been there since episode one.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that was so good. All right. So that was a cool moment. That was just like, God damn, that was great. Another moment that really threw me off. I legit thought they were going to kill Jaime Lannister this episode, and I'm so
we all
glad
did.
They
everybody
didn't.
Did, dude. I was when like, you hear the mountain pull his sword out of the hilt, everyone's just like, no.
I like literally gasped, and I was like, my heart stopped. I was like, no, you cannot kill him right now.
There were a couple of those moments. I was like, man, I was like, is he going to die? And then I was like, well, I was like, because then the same thing with Tyrion for a second there. I was like, I thought she might, because there really haven't been any huge, like, fan favorite deaths, you know. And so when Tormund almost died the previous episode, I was like, man, I'm surprised they let him live, because that's not Game of Thrones style. And then So when Tormund lived, I was like, okay, it's just a matter of time before they, you know, they kill someone else. So then when Tyrion was in there, I was like, man, I wonder if, you know, is she gonna kill Tyrion, or is she gonna let him live? And then he lived. And then I was like, oh man, oh, maybe it's Jaime. But then he got out too, and I was like, wow.
Dude, Jaime almost did. Oh my god.
I was really afraid that Tyrion was going to get absolutely smushed by the mountain.
Ugh.
I was like, this could just be the most brutal thing we've seen on the entire show. It could be a Glenn Walking Dead kind of moment, you know?
I was just expecting the mountain to pick him up by his head and crush it with one hand.
You know what?
That'd be too. I was thinking, like, grabbing him by the feet and just kind of, like, slapping him like you're airing out a rug.
Oh, kind of like the Hulk and Loki?
Yeah, something like that.
So I think that Tyrion's actually going to kill the mountain.
You do?
I do. I think that would be so gratifying to see that Tyrion...
why do you think this is going to happen?
Because the mountain could be doing something. Tyrion can run up behind him, stab him in the legs and in the throat. I don't know. It'll happen. Something like this will happen.
Okay, so there's no reason for why you think. This is more something you want to happen, not like plot reasons for it. Because this, and this happened, I think this will happen.
Yeah, I just want to. He just runs up behind him and stabs him in the legs.
You never
calls
know.
Calls him back. Yeah, I don't see that one happening, my friend.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, Jaime almost died, but he didn't. And also, we finally got to see Daenerys and Jon Snow and Cersei and Jaime and Tyrion and Brienne of Tarth and pretty much every major player in one setting talking about how much they hate each other and try to come to Jesus meeting. I'm like, we going to die unless we don't fight together. Which was great.
So much good stuff. And then we saw how much Cersei had actually played Tyrion in that whole scene with him. That was very surprising because, you know, we got Tyrion, who's such a clever, intelligent dude, and he usually is one step ahead of his family member. But then we see how incredibly deft Cersei can be when she really gets involved in the whole secrecy game, you know?
That was awesome.
So she played him so perfectly in that scene, and it was just a little mind-blowing when you're like, oh, damn.
She legit is the worst. What was I going to say? With that scene, how badass was it that Daenerys just casually strolled up on a dragon, just let her down?
Awesome. Yeah, and am I the only one that would be kind of pissed? I mean, Daenerys tends to make all these, you know, she comes in on her dragon. But when the dragon lands, it kind of destroys whatever it lands on. I'd be like, excuse me, this is my fucking, like, city, and this is a building in my city, and your dragon's destroying this ancient monument in my city. Excuse me. Little ridiculous.
Little ridiculous. Your dragon
just being a fucking bad guest.
She is the queen.
Your dog just shit on my rug. Are you going to pick it up or not?
Pretty much. Because you see all these rocks crumbling as the dragon's sliding its gigantic body down this building.
It really tied the room together.
It did.
And then the end of the episode, we finally find out who Jon Snow really is. And Bran finally got to do something. Bran did something finally.
He was useful. He helped with the little finger thing, and he told somebody about Jon Snow's actual name. Thank goodness. Not enough time to stop him from fucking Zant, but you know.
Hey, in the scheme of things, brother and sister and aunt and nephew, come on. It's not a big deal.
Not as gross as the Lannisters, but still pretty gross.
It's going to get you the purebred Targaryen baby, though.
Yeah, even if it's a little bit, you know, homely, a little slow.
So we find out that he is the heir to the throne, the Iron Throne, Jon Snow is. They're going to tell him. I don't know what he'll do with it, but we could expect Daenerys and Jon Snow to have babies, and then a gift to their babies would be 3 new dragon eggs, which I think all 3 dragons will die. And then there will be a new baby on every side, and then 3 new dragons, and it will repeat itself. What do you think? You're silent.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, where are the dragon eggs come from, though? I thought there weren't any more eggs.
I mean, they might find them where they're mining for dragon glass right now. There are probably some dragon eggs in there, right?
Solid logic, my friend.
I mean, come on. We found more dragon eggs, and we're trying for dragon glass. Oh, my God.
Oh, hey, look. You guys, there's some more dragon eggs. That's cool.
Dragon glass, man. It's like sap, like preserved.
Just like Jurassic Park.
Life found a way. So last week, Jeremy said he thought Cersei was going to die. Aren't you glad she didn't die this past episode?
Yeah, well, for me, it was more of just like when she was going to do the betrayal. And I wasn't sure if it was going to be now or if it was going to be later. And that was really one of the big things I was waiting to see. I got to say, though, I felt like the whole like revealing that Jon Snow was a Targaryen was a little weird, because at this point it's been revealed like 3 times, but they keep revealing it like no one knows.
Well, I think they like, you
know, the audience is pretty slow, man.
No, well, the like that, but
like
the audience,
it's like, we know. It's like, how many of these scenes do you need to do before, you know?
Well, I think a lot of the audience would know that, or I mean, there's that aspect, but also all these characters are so far apart from each other, and they're finally finding out, oh God, this is him, and this is like the key to telling him, because Jon Snow doesn't know who he is. Only Samwell, which he's a badass, knows, and Bran knows. So they're going to go tell him, and that's like sets the future in motion of like, is this going to cause problems with, you know, Daenerys, or is with anybody else? Is he going to become the king he's supposed to be, like Lion King Simba, or is he?
Yeah,
just...
I don't know. I've been surprised, honestly, because I've spoken to a number of people now who, even a couple episodes ago, still were like, so who's Jon Snow's actual parents? And it's like, well, they've addressed that, but a lot of people didn't quite catch it, I think, you know, exactly what was happening there. So I think this time they're like, all right, we're gonna show it, we're gonna spell it out nice and clear in no uncertain terms. So I think they've really just had to put that to rest, because I think that they had tried to kind of hint, you know, subtly tell you what was happening. But I think a lot of people, it was too subtle for them.
So with Cersei, do you think she's actually still pregnant? Do you think she's going to betray Jaime and her soldiers? Or do you actually think she's going to betray everybody? I don't know. Still up in the air. I mean, it definitely looked more like she was pregnant this time, but I don't know.
I don't know, man. I think she's probably still actually pregnant. I think that she actually is pregnant, and I think that she's definitely going to be betraying everybody. But I mean, that's not really. She's going to be betraying the pact that she made with everybody. But and I think that Jaime's definitely going to be on the hit list.
I can't wait. So, do you think Jaime or Tyrion's going to kill Cersei?
I think Jaime will probably do it. I think Tyrion already got his big moment when he killed his father.
So do you think Cersei will kill Tyrion, and then Jaime will kill will kill Cersei, and then Jaime might die, and it's like the end of
it's
the
hard
monsters?
To say. It's all 100% speculation. You know, it could go. That's the great thing about this show, is that you really never know where they're going to go with it, because they just do so much to keep you off balance and always guessing. And as soon as you think you figured out their method, they're like, nope, you didn't. Never mind. We're going to do something totally different now.
Interesting. So
what makes it so good?
Zombie Ice Dragon, your thoughts?
Thoughts were, holy shit, this is awesome and awful.
So that wall has been made for that wall. Basically, kept,
like 5,000 years, basically, is what it was there.
It was destroyed in a matter of seconds, easily.
Because they were stupid and gave the zombies a zombie dragon. It's like, how about no? You know, just a terrible idea. Let's take the medieval weapon of mass destruction and just hang out around the zombies when we know that they can convert other beings into zombies.
All right. I liked it. It looked cool. I don't know what's going to happen. And so how long do we have to wait now? Is it like another year or 2 years?
A year.
The end of 2018, right?
Yeah, mid-2018.
Okay. Oh.
It's just horrible.
Yeah, it is horrible, and only 7 more episodes. Oh, my goodness.
I know, and then it's over forever, and I'm going to be legitimately sad when this show is over.
So do you think George R. R. Martin's new book will be out before then, and we can read it and maybe find out what happens?
I don't think it's going to be out before then.
All right. Jeremy, your lasting thoughts on Game of Thrones?
It's good. I enjoyed it, man.
All right.
It's good.
All right, Sam. Random topic that just occurred to me as we were discussing this. What are a couple shows that you guys were legitimately sad when they ended? Like when you had that hole in your heart and you're like, oh, I'm like fucking a little depressed now that this show is over.
Breaking Bad.
Yep.
Sopranos. The Wire. Firefly. Legit sad. I was legit really sad about Breaking Bad. I was like, God, and Mad Men. Both those shows were so good. I'm like, what am I going to do now?
How about you, Jeremy?
I can't think of any shows that really came to an end where I was sad afterwards. Yeah, nothing that's coming to mind.
Well,
what about you, John?
Friends is the top of the list, man. I still can't watch the last episode of Friends. I still can't watch the last episode of Friends without getting all weepy. I can't do it.
What? Friends is like, it's as bad or worse than Disjointed.
You get out of here. I'm never going to agree with that, man. You're talking about my all-time favorite show.
Oh, I'm so sorry. That's your all-time.
It'd be like me trying to convince you that Michael Jackson isn't good.
He is so amazing, and you know it.
And I feel the same way about Friends. Friends is the Michael Jackson of television.
That's going to be tweeted out right in a few minutes.
Fair enough.
It's going to be tweeted out. Jonathan Atterbury said, you know, in hashtag triggered.
Friends still upsets me when I watch the end of that show. Mad Men, absolutely. When that show was over, that one hurt. Trying to think if there was anything else. I'm sure there's been one or two other things. That 70s show, I was kind of sad when that one ended because that was on for a long time, and I watched that one a lot.
So I like 70s show. You know, I don't really like a whole lot of sitcoms like that with laugh tracks, but I like that one. I like Seinfeld. Those are the two that I really, really enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what I'm going to do when they stop airing Simpsons episodes. I don't know what I will do.
That'll be an end of a whole cultural thing, man. That's like a big part of America since I was born, you know?
Yeah, Simpsons. And like, I was sad that they ended Futurama, but they brought it back and then they ended it again. But it had its run. I'm not too sad about that one. These are not the shows that I like got weepy over. I was just sad that they were gone. Like, I don't have them anymore. No more new episodes. However, Better Call Saul for Breaking Bad kind of like in that realm. So we still have basically a Breaking Bad sort of thing.
We do. And it's so good. I just finished season 2 of Better Call Saul on Netflix. Damn, that show is
good.
Wait till
you watch season 3. Oh my goodness. It's so good. That's a good question. I like that question. Cause I'm just trying to go through all the TV shows. I'm like, no, not Nip Tuck. No. Not 24.
Well, anyone in the audience, just hit us up. Let us know what some of your shows that you were like had that pang of sadness when it ended. Because I think that's a really interesting thing. Anytime a show actually gets you that attached to it, where you feel emotions when it's done and you feel that hole in your heart, that's a huge success, in my opinion.
I agree. All right. Let's move on to DC Comics and Batman and Joker. I don't know what the fuck they're doing, but it seems like there's 100 different Joker and Batman movies trying to get made right now, and I just can't fucking keep up. I just want to leave and not think about it.
It's apparent that DC does not know what the fuck they're doing.
So it's like there's like 10 Batman movies, and then like there was a rumor that, like, oh, this new Batman movie is not going to be part of the DC universe. And then, of course, that wasn't true. But, like, Jeremy, shed some light on these Joker and Batman movies, and what shall we do with it?
Okay, well, let me back that up. So has it been confirmed that the new Batman movie is not part of the DC universe or not?
No, what's his name?
It has not been confirmed.
No.
Here's the problem.
It did.
Here's the problem.
The director came out on Twitter and said, of course it's going to be part of the DC universe.
Well, see, but the problem is that all these rumors, we've got people like Brian who run movie websites, and he just said his theory is that Tyrion is going to kill the Mountain.
But I will never post that.
Stab him in the legs.
I will never post, like, as news. Websites do that as
But we
news.
Have people like Brian, though, who post it as though it's news. Like, oh, Mace Windu is Snoke.
Yes, it's gonna
because
happen.
Red and blue together make purple. Right. And so that's the problem, is that everyone's like, oh, see, this movie guy that I listen to and trust, he just said this shit, and therefore it must have legs to stand on. But it doesn't.
It's never published. Jeremy, let's go back.
That's why John and I make Kluger back everything up.
Oh, my God. All right, let's back up. Let's back up, and let's back it up, baby. So you were saying, Jeremy.
Well, at this point, I don't actually know what's going on with the Batman movie, because if it's a standalone, you know, or what is – now, DC with the comics, the reason why it wouldn't surprise me if they did that with a movie is because they do that a lot of times with the comics. Like, they'll do – like, they've got a million monthly Batman books, but they will still let somebody come in, and they've got, like, what they call, like, their Earth One books where – they basically have to take the same premise of Batman and Bruce Wayne, but then they can change things and let people do, like, their own kind of spin on these characters. Like, there's a writer-artist, Sean Gordon Murphy, who's currently working on a Batman book called Batman White Knight. And and in that book, the Joker is, like, you know, all they've said so far is that he's kind of cured, and he basically takes on this, like, public persona of this figure who, like, kind of launches a pseudo kind of, like, media war against the Batman. And it looks like it's going to be awesome, but it doesn't take place in the, like, continuity of your regular monthly Batman title. So, I mean, I could see them doing that type of thing with the movies where somebody gets to come in and make a Batman movie that's not necessarily in the continuity of the DC, like, movies that we've seen so far.
Yeah.
And so I could see them doing that, which is why, to me, like, when that came out, I was like, you know, I could see that happening. But I think it's a terrible idea to do in the movies. I think it's an interesting concept to do as a movie, but I think to execute it, you know, in a movie format is incredibly confusing.
So
especially if Ben Affleck's going to be that Batman, you know. Yeah.
So I've heard stories on this new Joker movie where it will center on Joker and Harley Quinn being together – you know, right, you know, at the beginning of their relationship. Do you think that's what we want? Do you think that's what we need or what we should want to see? Or are you just good with any type of DC story like that? Or do you think there's probably a million other stories they could probably go from and be better than that?
We do not need a Joker origin movie ever. Like, we've seen it, like, over and over again. Like, we haven't really seen it over and over again. There's been, like, no kind of official origin. You know, it's always just this kind of, like, mystery type of deal. But, I mean, it almost works better when you don't reveal it. Plus, like, how are you, you know, you have to have Batman in the movie because you can't have a Joker origin with no Batman.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it just feels like they're just looking for ways to pile on the superhero movie money.
Yeah. Atterbury, do you agree?
I agree completely. I don't, you know, the main thing for me is I just don't care that much. All I want is a good Batman movie and a good Superman movie. I could give a rip about every other character in that universe and every other combination or whatever. I just want to see let Ben Affleck make a really cool Batman movie. I'm up for that. I mean, I have complete faith that Affleck can be a great Batman. And I think that if he made the fucking movie, it would probably be good. It'd probably be really good.
All right. I'm curious. I would like to see just something that tickles your fancy
a lot like Wonder Woman did. Yes, it was a fun movie. It put it on the right track, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's take it slow.
And let's agree that Zack Snyder needs to be kept far, far away from all the DC movies. And really, everything in general.
Hey, Watchmen was awesome.
Joss Whedon has ended up doing a lot of reshoots for the Justice League movie.
Yep. Which I'm happy about.
Because originally they made it sound like he was just going to kind of come in and wrap it up and do some edits, but they've actually done like a bunch of reshoots and they've added some things. Like apparently they actually added the Hall of Justice, which I thought was an interesting touch.
Which will be awesome.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to note that at one point Warner Brothers and DC hired Joss Whedon to make the Wonder Woman movie years ago, and he wanted to keep it in World War II, and they said no. And years went by, and now we got the Wonder Woman we have today, which is I'm very happy about. But it's fun that they asked him to come in and help out, you know, help a fellow brother director out in time of need. So I don't know, I like it. So yeah, Batman Joker news. I'm sure there will be 10 other stories by next week that we will not know what's happening with, right?
Yeah, and they announced that The Rock's not going to be in the Shazam movie, which is fucking weird.
So do you think that's they're just throwing people off and he'll make a cameo, or do you think that that's legit? Like, they could say that and be like, he might show up at the very end of the movie, just like to surprise everybody, which I hate when they do that stuff.
It would be weird because he's kind of, you know, the Black Adam is the only notable Shazam villain. Like, there's like, you know, off the top of my head, I can't think of another single Shazam villain besides Black Adam.
Hmm.
So I don't know who he's going to be fighting. I know they said that it's going to be from like the perspective of like seeing the kid as the hero and how he sees like the kid like being the hero, but like seeing how events unfold with like Man of Steel and then the Batman versus Superman movie and how he responds to that. But I mean, still at the end of the day, I mean, you gotta have somebody for him to fight.
Yeah.
Like personally, I feel like they should just take The Rock's Black Adam and use him as a villain in another movie and not even make a Shazam movie. Because, really, who knows, besides really big comic fans, I don't know a lot of people that have even heard of Shazam. And to me, the whole Shazam thing seems just like some silly shit. Like, if you look at the story and just the character as a whole, like, just seeing a guy on screen going, Shazam! It's just going to seem pretty fucking weird, in my opinion. As a non-comic book dude, it just seems like it's going to be weird in our modern-day comic book movie world.
I don't know. Jeremy, what do you think?
I think it's going to be weird. I could see it, you know, I could see them doing it if they want to make it more of like a you know, like a superhero movie specifically for kids that has less of the serious tone of like the Superman and the BVS movies. You know, one of the things I was kind of originally hoping they were going to do when they signed The Rock on for Black Adam was that The Rock was really going to be playing, because basically what happens is like the kid says Shazam and he's basically turned into Superman. And I was really hoping that The Rock was going to be playing both Shazam, like the superhero, and then also Black Adam. So I was kind of hoping that they were going to really have him, because it would be, and really they sort of did this in the Jumanji movie, but basically what you would have is The Rock playing Superman with controlled by like a 12-year-old or a 10-year-old inside that body. And I thought that would have been a really fun thing to watch The Rock do, but that's kind of really what you're getting in Jumanji, you know?
Yeah.
Well, we'll see how it turns out. We will see. All right, let's get to our last segment here. Our last segment. So we know that Obi-Wan Kenobi and, Obi-Wan Kenobi is getting his own movie, origin story probably. And there's talk about a Jabba the Hutt movie or what other characters they should get their own spinoff movie in the Star Wars universe that Disney is making every year. And I guess, Jeremy, you said that we should give us the spiel for what we're doing now.
Usually when we talk these movies, we talk about what we think is going to happen. I figured it would be fun for us to change it up. And instead of that, put each of us in charge of making those movies. And if we were going to make those movies, what is the plot that we would write for them to make?
Okay.
So if you were in charge of Jabba the Hutt movie and the Kenobi movie, what would you want them to do?
So are you asking me or John?
Whatever, man.
John, you're up.
Do your thing.
Sure, I'll take it first.
That's what you said.
That's right, you will.
I'm going to start with the Jabba movie. And we kind of touched on this a little bit. You know, we said we wanted to have a Scorsese Jabba movie. And that one's a given at this point. So I'm not going to do that thing. But what I really think that if they're going to do a Jabba movie, it needs to really be a bounty hunter movie. It needs to be, you know, Jabba is the main driving force behind whatever's going on. But I would like to see them turn it into a Smoke and Aces type movie where we've got just all the bounty hunters out kicking ass, doing stuff, maybe even all going after the same target. And just really highlighting the whole scum and villainy part of it. You know, it needs to be gritty. It needs to be violent and dark. But also give you more backstory on all, like, the rogues gallery that is all those bounty hunters we see lined up on the exit, the ship, the Super Star Destroyer in Empire Strikes Back. I think that would just be a really fun movie. And, you know, instead of having – there's been talk of having a solo Boba Fett movie, which I don't want. I don't want to see that. I would like this to be as close to a Boba Fett movie as you can get. So have him just be one of the stars of this movie and let that be that. We don't need a whole Boba Fett movie.
Yeah, I don't want that helmet to ever come off.
Nope, it really doesn't need to. And then the more they humanize him, the worse it gets.
Yeah, it needs to be just like Judge Dredd where you never see his face.
Just a terrifying, quiet, badass motherfucker. Keep the mystery in the Fett. So then secondly, for the Obi-Wan movie, I think one thing that needs to be a prominent feature in this movie is isolation. I'd like to see it be Obi-Wan Kenobi meets Castaway. So, you know, for the most part, so, you know, we get to see him kind of getting a little bit maybe even crazy and kooky out there on his own. But I do think that one thing we absolutely should have is Liam Neeson as Qui-Gon in spirit form there to mentor him. I think that needs to be absolutely in that movie. If they did that, everyone, because we can all agree pretty much that Qui-Gon was the best part of Phantom Menace. And just giving the Star Wars fans more Liam Neeson Qui-Gon would be a huge hit. People would fucking love it. And Ewan McGregor has to be Obi-Wan. He better be Obi-Wan or I'm be pissed. And I really just needs to be the story of Obi-Wan watching over Luke. That's really the only story they can tell that would fit. And just let it be, you know, him becoming a hermit and dealing with bounty hunters that come along looking for Luke or sand people that would be giving them trouble and that kind of thing. And I feel like that'd be a great movie, but it needs to be more drama than action.
All right. I can get behind that. All right. I'll go. So with Jabba the Hutt, I really want Godfather Jabba the Hutt. I want like the Hutt Italian family and then the strife between all the family. And Jabba, I guess, you see, like, he's actually a good dude, but then just the family brings me back in, and he becomes who he is. And I think it would be so cool to see the whole Hutt family back then and how they're – because he is a gangster and, like, deal with other gangsters like him throughout time up until, you know, the Star Wars movies. But that would be really cool on how he gets his money and, you know, feuding with other families across the galaxy. That would be so much fun. That's what I want to see. That's what I want.
I thought about the same thing. Something like it definitely needs to have that gangster underworld element really, really honed in on.
Yes, very much so. And then with Obi-Wan, I would actually like to see an origin Obi-Wan, like, you know, his childhood up until, you know, because in in episode one, he's already like mid-training or...
But he's like 15 as a Padawan in episode one. So you're saying you want a whole movie focused on 10-year-old Obi-Wan? We got that already. It was called The Phantom Menace, and it sucked. Because
you love the prequels so much, that's why you want it.
How old was Obi-Wan supposed to be? He's like 30.
Not in the first one. In the first one, he was a teenager.
Yeah.
Really? Ugh. I gotta rethink this.
Yeah, because think about how old Anakin is in the first one, right? He's like, what, 8?
Yeah.
So think about how old Anakin is in Revenge of the Sith, right? And I'm surprised you don't know this off the top of your head because those are the movies that you know the most about. But if by your logic, I mean, Kenobi would have been like 80 in Revenge of the Sith.
They say pretty clearly a number of times that they feel like they're brothers. So that insinuates that there's not much of an age gap between them. There's probably like less than 10 years between the two of them.
Okay, so I guess, yeah, if we're doing an Obi-Wan movie, oh my goodness, I guess it would have to be the time when he's looking after Luke. And I would really like to see it.
I mean, you can still make your direct to Blu-ray Obi-Wan movie. It's okay. We're not saying you can't make it. We're just saying it's stupid.
We're just saying it's a terrible idea.
Fuck me. All right. So maybe I'm train spotting with Obi-Wan, like where he has like
Tatooine heroin.
He has nothing to do but watch Luke, so he like just goes on benders and like meets crazy people. And then because they refer to him as like the kooky old guy, basically.
And it's because of his heroin addiction?
I don't know. Something. Blue milk was...
Too much death sticks?
That's where I'm going with it right now. That would be super fun.
You just said that because it's another Ewan McGregor movie.
I like it, though. It would be so good. Okay, Jeremy, the master, what do you have in store for us?
All right, I'm going to open the show with the Jabba movie. I kind of want to see – I would do it where – with a little bit of what Kluger said, where you see the relationship and the kind of hierarchy of the Hutts. And it would be a mixture of like – because, you know, you never really see – at least I don't remember if they cover it. They might have covered it in the books, but I don't know since the books are kind of sort of tossed out with legendary status. – And John may know this, like, because there's a lot of Hutts, so I don't know if Jabba is, like, in charge of the Hutts or, like, where he ranks in all of that.
He's not in charge. He's just one of the regional lords, basically.
Okay. The way I would do it is I would have it take place probably after Revenge of the Sith and have it set up to where the Emperor is trying to assert control over all of his, you know, known space. Part of what is in that area is the Hutt territory, which is super controlled by the Hutts. And I feel like that the Emperor would want to control that no different than he is controlling everything else. And I feel like a lot of the conflict that could be in there is the Emperor trying to take over that no different than him trying to conquer everything else. But in this case, because he's already been exposed, he can't really do it as much through subterfuge the way that he kind of had appointed himself, you know, emperor. So what you could do with that is that's where he could come into play, where you have all the bounty hunters, because now he's got to send all of his stormtroopers to fight them. But he's not just fighting droids, like he's fighting, you know, the mercenaries for the Hutts. You know, they've got to face all of the bounty hunters. And I feel like a good way to end it is to actually where he realizes that he can't fully conquer them, so he just kind of lets them do their thing, basically agreeing that they won't oppose him doing his stuff. And that's also where you could see how the Emperor and the Empire then has access to those bounty hunters, as in that's part of the agreement, like, hey, if we want to use your bounty hunters for something, you know, we get to use them. And that's also where it could kind of come into play, where then you all of a sudden see them, you know, on the Star Destroyer, is because they have access to those bounty hunters now after, you know. And that also could be the reason why the Imperial guys hate the bounty hunters so much.
Interesting. I like it.
I like it.
All right.
That sounds good.
So my Kenobi movie starts with him on Tatooine keeping an eye on Luke, right? But Not a lot for him to do. I feel like he would go stir crazy, but I feel like he would also struggle with the idea of I have to hang out on this planet when, you know, and he may or may not know at that point that that Anakin is alive and is Darth Vader. But I feel like he would struggle with the idea of I have to basically go sit on this planet and watch this kid while there are other Jedi out in the galaxy that I could be saving, I could be rescuing, anything like that. And I feel like what he a cool story would be to see him actually leave, right? He decides to leave Tatooine for whatever reason. You know, he finds out that there's a small little enclave of Jedi and they're in trouble. He hears it, you know, in Mos Eisley or whatever. And so he actually goes and leaves to investigate. And I feel like something fun that would happen at the same time is Vader actually has found out that there's a little enclave of, like, hidden Jedi. Because I feel like the thing that we never got with Revenge of the Sith is we never got to see Darth Vader in the suit ripping through a bunch of Jedi. True. And I feel like this movie would be a great way to kind of rectify that. Just as it was fun to watch him tear through those rebel troops, it would be awesome to watch him just rip through a bunch of dudes with lightsabers. And I feel like you could actually get a small a small rematch between Vader and Kenobi as a kind of like final battle. Because I feel like if you're going to have a Kenobi movie, right, you know, it's to me it's hard to have a movie about a Jedi, even on a planet, if he's not going to have some kind of worthy lightsaber battle at the end. And I feel like it would add a little bit of story to the re-meeting of him in the suit, you know, because it, when he first fought him on Mustafar, Anakin really wasn't a Sith at that point. I mean, he was by name, but he didn't have any dark side abilities. You could have Obi-Wan have to face him when he's actually had some dark side training. So a lot of the stuff that he did to Luke in Empire, where he's like tearing shit off and hitting him with it, like you could see a lot of that, you know, throw down in that fight. And then at the end, you know, he's kind of accepted with his fight with Vader. Vader could start to kind of read his mind a little bit and realize maybe that there's something else going on. And then that makes Obi-Wan truly realize that he can't ever actually leave that planet again. Hmm. You know, he's got to stay on, like, there's got, you know, because if Vader ever truly found out what he was doing and where he was, then that would be an even bigger problem. So that's when he truly realizes that he's got to stay on the planet and never leave it again.
Well, I would watch those. I would watch those.
Definitely.
Wow. Cool. Feel like this, I mean, that could be in like comic book form too. That could be a cool comic book series. But I would rather see a movie though.
There's actually a book called Kenobi about the whole period of time between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope when Obi-Wan's just hanging out on Tatooine. It's supposed to be really good. I haven't read it yet, but I keep on meaning to read it. And I'd be interested to read that book because they may pull a lot from that book for this movie.
Yeah. I might have to go read that too so I can read another Star Wars book first time in a long time. That'd be fun. I like that. That was good. So Jabba the Hutt, if you listening, and Obi-Wan, you listening, take our suggestions, mix them together. Train spotting Obi-Wan.
Just not Kluger's idea about the child Obi-Wan, please. Just forget about that part.
Yeah, forget that. I admit it. Well, thanks for listening.
Speaking of prequels, though, man, those pictures of Donald Glover as Lando.
Oh, badass.
Oh, dude. Like, I'd rather have a whole Lando movie with that than a Han Solo movie.
I really hope we get Billy Dee Williams back in one of the movies coming out. But yeah, Donald Glover looking like a young Lando, man. Very excited.
I would rather have him be Lando's son in the new Star Wars movies because then we could have like three or four movies of him being, you know,
that would Lando, be really cool.
Lando Jr. or whatever. I think that would be way more fun.
Brando? Brando Calrissian? Lando and Brando. I like
Why
it.
Brando?
I don't know. Just sounds like Lando.
Okay.
Have good ideas.
It's a new theory. You're hearing it here first.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, that is episode 53 of Mediocrity. Find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Thanks again to Jonathan Atterbury and Jeremy Magert. We always have fun, and we'll be back next week. Well, we won't be talking about Game of Thrones next week, but maybe something else. Maybe more Star Wars. Maybe more Batman news. And definitely not Friends. Not the Friends.
I'm going to work it in there somewhere.
It'll be in there.
It will be in there. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you all soon.